Welcome to the Freedom Nation podcast, and it's another week with a fantastic guest. And on today's show, I have Bart Merrill, the Side Hustle Samurai. You are going to love this. For those of you that are sitting there in your cubicles and thinking about, okay, what can I do to get out of this cubicle? What can I do to get out of this business that's got me trapped? Bart's your guy. He's going to tell you how he's monetized multiple side hustles over his life. And guess what? He's actually never had a real job. He actually just did side hustles and created this over his life. So I am super excited to share him with you and cannot wait to have you on the show. So stay tuned. We'll be right back in just 1 second.
Welcome to the Freedom Nation podcast with Jeff Kickle. On this show, Jeff shares his expertise in financial and retirement planning from a different perspective. Planning for your Freedom Day, which is the first day that you wake up and have enough income or assets and do not have to go to work that day. Learn how to calculate what you need, how to generate income sources, and listen to interviews from others who've done it themselves. Get ready to experience your own Freedom Day.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm so happy to be on today. And I just wanted to share with everybody who's been waiting and hearing me talk about this for the last 9 months, the Overcoming the Retirement Trap book, my story and the story of Freedom Day is out on Amazon. It'll be in the show notes down below. Make sure that you take a hold and grab a copy of that, because that's what's going to help you get to your Freedom Day. And with that, let's go to Bart Merrill here. Bart, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So excited to have you on the show here today. Loved our little pre-interview, hearing about your history of side hustles and all that, and how you became the Side Hustle Samurai. So let's get started. Why don't you share with us your story? How'd you get started?
So I didn't start out thinking I was going to be a side hustler. That wasn't my intention. I actually had a goal in mind. I wanted to become an FBI agent and chase serial killers.
Nice.
I was told that the best way into the FBI at the time, back when I was in college or starting college, was accounting. And once you get in the FBI, you don't have to stay in the white collar area. If you're an accountant, you can apply to different positions. And if you're the best choice or you have the best power, you get to get that position. And so my idea was, okay, I'm going to get in the easiest way and I'm going to get over to where I want to be. About my last quarter, I took it off. I went home and helped out on the farm because I wanted to improve my Spanish to help me get in the FBI, because Spanish was a language that they were coveting. And while I was down there, I was in Podunk, New Mexico. I was making money. It was in my pockets. It was burning holes in my pockets. People I knew, FBI, not FBI agents, Border Patrol agents, customs agents, police people were getting this RK surgery done on their eyes. It was before LASIK. It's where they go in and they make incisions in your eyeball. So each of my eyeballs has like 16 incisions in it. Changes the shape of your eyeball and you, bam, you can see without glasses. I went and got it done and perfect. I was 20/20 in one eye, 20/25 in the other eye. I didn't have glasses until in my 50s. And I was like, this is great. I get back up to school. I start the FBI process. And I found out that that automatically disqualifies you from the FBI because it's considered experimental. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to put a bunch of money into you and then you go blind.
Yeah.
And so I was up there doing landscaping for $5 an hour, devastated, not knowing what I was going to do. And my dad's training or my dad's influence kind of kicked in. Dad was a pig farmer, but he wasn't just a pig farmer. He had his hands in many different things in the agricultural industry. Mm-hmm. And so I think I told you, he didn't ever sit me down and tell me the birds and the bees of business.
He just showed me
by example, and he encouraged me and helped me. Started my first side hustle at age 15. I bought this stereo at age 11, thinking I was buying this great asset, and it was a liability because every time I went to town, I had to buy the new tunes. And for an 11-year-old kid, that was a lot of money. And so I was buying tunes, listening to music. And then when I turned 15 and was able to have a driver's license, I decided it was time to turn that into an asset.
Okay.
And I started my first business. It was a mobile disco business. I didn't even have customers. I had to create my own opportunity. Mm-hmm. In Podunk, New Mexico, there was nobody hiring 15-year-old DJs. So I rented the community center after ball games and stuff on the weekends. I hired an off-duty cop for security. Mom and dad took money at the door. I spun records. Everybody danced and had a good time. Made good chunk of change as I went through high school and college.
My image of Footloose just keeps coming back into my head with this going on. I'm just saying.
Well, it was probably pretty close, but we had a good time. And it was a good money-making opportunity. Started with cheap. My first stereo cost me $285. It was a Sanyo all-in-one system. Had the cassette deck over here. I wonder if you're old enough to know what was on the other side.
Of the cassettes?
So you had the cassette. In the center, you had the tuner. Oh, on top, you had the record. What was on this other side over here?
Oh, I bet you it's an 8-track player.
It was an 8-track player.
Nice.
Most of the people listening probably don't even know what that is. I've never even heard
of an 8-track. But for those of us that grew up listening to 8-tracks, it actually was some of the best sound you're ever going to hear.
And so that's how old I – and then by the time I finished out of college, I had shut down the operation. I actually sold the operation to my business partner. Nice. We had a $20,000 stereo system, you know, Triamp, PV stacks, lights, a low light system. It was just, I mean, when we were doing big dances, we were having a good time.
Yeah.
So then this all kicked in. The stuff that my dad had taught me about just doing things that happened. And I told you earlier that sometimes I look back on my life and I go, man, I was lucky. But no, what is luck? Seneca says luck is when opportunity and preparedness meet. And I add one more thing. You got to take action.
Yep.
Preparedness and opportunity without action. And I'll, when you ask me your 5 questions, I have the perfect answer to one of those questions that was a failure of mine. And it's just about not taking action.
Yep.
And so I'm devastated. A buddy of mine who was working for a bungee tower company that was in my college town says, hey, how would you like to go back to Japan? I'd spent a couple of years in Japan, spoke Japanese, and they were looking for someone who spoke Japanese and was a bungee jump person. I wasn't a bungee jump person, but I was an adrenaline junkie. I love that stuff.
The good thing about bungee jumping is it doesn't really require any skill. All you got to do is use gravity to your effect.
So. Exactly. So I went and applied. I talked to the people. They're like, okay, you're what we got. So we're going to train you and get you on your way to Japan. 3 months later,
works for me.
I was in Japan training the staff and pushing little Japanese people off the top of an 8-story bungee jump tower. And then
the greatest job you've ever had in your life.
Oh, it was a blast, you know? And anyway, it was my start. Mm-hmm. And then while I was there, I would go to the gym at night. And I'm 6'4", 220 at that time, 220, 225. So I'm pretty big in Japan. I go into the gym and I'm still big. And I'm this big gringo, big gaijin, that's what they call you in Japanese, in this gym. And only the staff would speak to me for like the first 2 weeks. And this guy comes up to me, Atsumi, and he goes, Hero. And I said, Hero. And then I started speaking Japanese to him. He's like, whew, I'm glad you speak Japanese because I was done at Hero. And we became friends. He got me in his clique, his group, and made me some new friends. And a couple of years down the road, maybe not even 2 years, he's like, he was a big rig driver in Japan.
Okay.
And he said, I want to quit driving big rig and I want to start importing camping trailers, Ford and Dodge diesel pickups. Will you help me? I had no idea how to do that, but I said yes. And we started. He didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to do it. We've been business partners ever since. That was back in 1997.
Nice.
And it's still one of my side hustles. And it at its peak when it was really big, it was side hustle time with full income, good full income money. Mm-hmm. And so I just, and anything that crosses my path, I always ask, how can I monetize it? Or can I monetize it? Mm-hmm. So just in 2024, March 25th, 2024, I had to have my lower leg amputated.
Oh, no.
My left leg. And I found out about that about in October of 2023.
Yeah.
And because of insurance reasons and because of not wanting to pay out of pocket twice and all that stuff, I decided to postpone it. And then my wife had health issues, so I decided to postpone it again. Mm-hmm. And then finally, when I got it done, well, before I got it done, you know, after that doctor's initial shock of, hey, your leg's going to have to go. Mm-hmm. My first thought was, okay, I don't like this, mm-hmm. but it's going to happen. There's nothing I can do about it. How yep. can I monetize it? Mm-hmm. 6 months post-op, I contracted with my prosthetist to help people who are going through what I go through and do a little bit of marketing for him.
Okay. Interesting.
And so I monetized getting my leg cut off. Mm-hmm. And if I, you know, it's just one of those things that comes natural to me. I think about it. And if I don't think about it, it's not going to happen. So mm-hmm. I thought about it when the opportunity came up. And so he has competition. I said, you know, your competition has a guy to mm-hmm. talk to other people, to help them through it.
Yeah.
You don't have a guy. I'm your guy. Mm-hmm. And that started the negotiations. We came to an agreement. I'm a 1099 contracted person to him. I don't mm-hmm. have to go in. I do it when it works, when it fits into my schedule. And we just, you know, they give me the phone numbers of the people I need to talk to mm-hmm. and we get it done.
That's awesome.
And that's awesome. I used to help do a speaking club for a drug rehab center, like a Toastmasters. I don't know if you're familiar with Toastmasters.
Yeah, of course. Yep.
And so a similar thing to that for a drug rehab center to help them tell their story.
Okay.
And I was sitting in this drug rehab center listening to Jenny tell her story. And she was talking about how when they would go out and about as a family, everything was normal. Mm-hmm. Wasn't until they got home that the abuse and the neglect happened.
Yeah.
In her mind, until she got to college, she thought everybody went home to the same thing she went home to. Mm. So I was sitting there in that setting and I was thinking about finances and how if you didn't grow up with my dad or someone like my dad, you don't think like I do.
No.
So how can I help you think like I do?
Absolutely.
And those who are, like you said, in the, you know, in the job that they may want to get out of, or they want to retire from, but they can't afford it.
Yeah.
You need to get a side hustle. I think everybody should have a side hustle because if you're a W-2 employee and you don't have a side hustle, you're missing out on some deductions that you can have.
Well, but I also say that it takes the more side hustles you have, the less risk you take. Yeah. You know, that's the thing, because the less risk that's out there. I mean, you know, I mean, some side hustles work, some of them don't. Yeah. But, you know, the big problem is, okay, if you're completely reliant on a job, what happens when that job is removed? For me, that was October 2nd, 2003. I walked into my office with my safe job and found out that my job had been eliminated. And I was the primary source of income. What was I going to do? Now, I managed to keep a job within the company, just doing something different. But that really did a whammy on me in my brain, because I was like, man, I can't afford to lose this job and everything else. You know, today I don't have that worry because I've got like 17, 18 different sources of income coming in. So, and I'm constantly looking for more and more and more, because everyone I see, and I'm sure you feel the same way, everyone you have just takes one more level of risk out of the picture.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. I don't remember what year it was, but several years ago, my wife is Japanese.
Okay.
And she goes home to Japan to visit her family quite often. And when she does, she usually gets her health checks done.
Okay.
And she called me from Japan in the early 2000s, and she calmly informed me that the initial test indicated cancer. Mm. Now, if everybody's life has probably been touched by cancer in one way or another. Obviously, my first thought was, I could lose my wife.
Yeah.
Sadly, my second thought was, we can't afford this. Mm-hmm. You know, so why do my thoughts go to money so quickly? Everybody says money isn't everything. Mm-hmm. Or is it? when you don't have any or you don't have enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid that I don't have enough to drop everything and be by her side as she has to go through whatever it is she's going to have to go through. I'm afraid that I don't have everything, enough money to afford everything at the disposal of the medical industry to take care of her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm afraid about this. Now, luckily, after 8 sleepless nights, the biopsy came back negative and she just had to have a tumor removed before it turned cancerous. And so we were lucky. I got a wake-up call.
Mm-hmm.
When I lost my leg, I had similar fears.
Mm-hmm.
But the pressure was so relieved because I have, like you said, multiple streams of income feeding it. Mm-hmm. The pressure, I mean, my main source of income at the time was dog training.
Okay.
And it's a little hard to train a dog on one leg.
Absolutely.
And I had no idea. I've never been through an amputation. I don't know how long I'm going to be off my feet. I mean, my foot.
Yeah.
That was a joke.
Yeah.
Well, I joke about it. It's,
yeah.
But
well, it's not off your feet. It's on your feet. But I mean, other than that,
But the fact of the matter is, because I had those multiple streams coming in, I was losing a big chunk, but I had pressure relieving that to where I didn't have to worry as much.
Hmm.
And it's just so much relief when you have multiple streams of income. Mm-hmm. And they got to start somewhere. They need to start as a side hustle.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about that. So let's take you and we're going to drop you into a cubicle and you're getting up, you're going to work every day. You do your job. What do you use? What techniques do you use to identify what might potentially be a good side hustle?
So the number one pitfall is picking the wrong side hustle. So when doing a side hustle, the number one pitfall is picking the wrong side hustle. So how do we pick the right one? So if you're like me, then you think about everything. You probably are like me. Anything crosses your path, you think about it. For those people who don't, I take them through a process to pick the right side hustle. We're going to look at what do you like to do? What do you need to do? What are you already doing?
Yep.
You're going to make those three lists. Then you're going to make three more lists. What do you want to learn? What do you need to learn?
Mm-hmm.
What have you already learned that you can teach someone else?
Nice.
So now we have six lists. Now we have to refine those into two lists. And they're going to be all the same lists, all the same things, but we're going to have them on two separate lists.
Mm-hmm.
One list is, what do you like to do the most? And then the other list is, what can you turn into a stream of income the fastest? And you may be wrong on this list. I was.
Yep.
So another quick story. My wife told me a few years ago that, hey, you're giving me more than I bargained for, and I would like to see a little less of you. She said I needed to lose weight. And she was joking and being funny, but she was right. I mean, I look at myself in my before and after picture. I go, man, I was in bad shape. But sometimes us men, we just kind of go like this and we go, yeah. And so anyway, I decided whenever I decided that I was going to do this, I said, okay, if I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to get paid for it. Like Marie Osmond or Dan Marino, the spokespeople for Nutrisystem. And so I thought, okay, so I want to get back to my wedding weight because I want to give my wife what she bargained for.
Okay.
You know, what she expected. And so back to my wedding weight. Wait, that's a goal for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I went to GoDaddy, typed in backtomyweddingweight.com. It was available. I bought it. I didn't even know what I was going to do to lose weight. I didn't know how don't know if I could.
I
didn't
the URL even know because I'm going to, this is how our logic works. Cause I do the same thing. Just get the damn URL and you'll figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. And so I had it and I thought in my head that within 6 months, this would be a stream of income.
Sure.
That was my thought. I went in there looking for my holy grail of weight loss programs that's going to help me lose weight. everything out there was about the 90-day challenge of me exercising, getting my butt to the gym, and dieting. And I was just like, if I got to exercise and diet, why do I need your product? Of course I'm going to lose weight.
Yeah.
And I had enough motivation to get to the gym that first day and buy the 3-year membership and never go back again. And so I held onto this domain for 7 years. Okay. And then my friend Beth, she calls me. She lives in California. And she's like, Bart, you got to try this. It's amazing. You got to try this. Even if you try it and you don't like it and you don't get your results, you get the money back because you can send it back. And I'm like, Beth, calm down. What is it? It's the 10-day celebrity transformation cleanse. Beth, I want to do a 10-day cleanse like I want a colonoscopy, and that's not very bad. Now, Beth, she's pretty quick on her feet.
It's just basically in reverse, the colonoscopies.
And Beth says, well, at your age, you probably need both.
Yeah, thanks.
And she bugged me for about a year and a half, and I finally tried it. On my first 10 days, I lost 18 and a half pounds.
Wow.
My second 10 day, I mean, that got me excited. I'm like, okay, give me another one. I waited four or 5 days. I did another one. Another 11 pounds gone.
Wow.
Within less than 30 days, I was down almost 30 pounds. Got me two more. In 4 months and or in 2 months and 5 days, I did four cleanses, lost almost 50 pounds, and gave my wife what she bargained for.
There you go.
My back to my weightingweight.com now became a stream of income.
Okay.
About the time I hit that third cleanse, people were wanting what I got, what I had.
Yeah.
It's not about the weight loss program. It's not about that. It's the fact that I did something, what I needed to do, that I didn't want to do, and I turned it into a stream of income.
Which is awesome.
So don't overlook the stuff that you need to do. Like my friend, so whenever I had to have my leg chopped off, my prosthetist says, you want to talk to somebody, grief counseling, because they need to help you say goodbye to your leg. It's going to help. My friend who did that, she's a grief counselor, not because of something she wanted to go through.
Yeah.
Because she lost a teenage son in her life. And so she turned that into a stream of income and helps people get through it. And so that's what you have to do. You find those two things. And then you look at those two lists and you say, okay, what are the ones that are at the high on both lists at the highest? And like I said, and then you'll have a handful of things to try that you're going to, and then you have to evaluate them on what are the resources it's going to take? Are you going to need to have a place? How much is it going to cost? How much time is it going to take? How much effort is it going to take? What are you willing to give up to make this happen? Dog training came by just happened. When I say it just happened, we adopted an 8-month-old 90-pound Rottweiler puppy that didn't know the word no. I was calling my buddy who was a dog trainer.
Who didn't understand day, the every word other no day. And had the size to be able to overcome no if it actually happened. So.
Exactly. And my friend was like giving me advice. And he finally said, Bart, we're doing a train-to-trainer program here in a couple of weeks. You probably should be in that program. It was 2 months. All day, every day, you know, 9 to 5 every day working because they had tons of dogs in their program. And it cost me $8,000 to go through the program. I went through it, started this dog training business. My first year, I made almost $100,000 training dogs. So I got paid a good chunk of change to play with other people's dogs. My business partner, who I met at the event that he was putting on, we share expenses, but our businesses are separate. So we have a series LLC running.
Yeah.
He made almost $50,000 very part-time because he's a plumber.
Yeah.
And so things that happen that not everybody has $8,000. I didn't even have $8,000. I just happened to be in the middle of a refinance of my house. And so I took out $14,000 for startup expenses for my business.
Yeah.
It paid off really quick. And so that's the process that I do use to take people through that, to hopefully get them thinking like I do.
Yeah.
Thinking like my dad does. Like I said, if you didn't grow up with my dad or someone like my dad, you don't think like I do.
No. No, but I mean, I think it's something that you learn. I mean, I didn't grow up with that. I mean, it's hilarious because my dad's three siblings all at one time or another were self-employed, had created businesses and things like that. My dad was completely different. Engineer, you know, worked a job. You know, he probably the most successful of the whole group besides my uncle, because he did just work a job and, you know, kept doing that over time, never was interested in starting a business. Yeah. I wasn't really around my dad's siblings, so I didn't really have anybody like that. And I mean, it was 15 years into my working career before I became, you know, an entrepreneur. I realize now that I was an intrapreneur. You know, I was inside other people's businesses, and I was always the one that wasn't scared to lift my hand and go, well, this is really stupid. And I had really good people that, you know, that I worked for who said, well, yeah, okay, it's really stupid. You go fix it now. And they gave me the rope to hang myself, or, you know, the platform to make it successful. Right. But you know, I mean, I didn't really have anybody like that. So I didn't have a your dad. It took me almost 20 years before I really had a successful business. But you know, I think this can be learned.
And that's why I do what I do. I wrote a book, Monetize Your Mindset.
Nice.
And it's on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon, but it's not a what to do book. It's a how to think book.
Yeah.
And it goes over the things that I, you know, we have examples. I mean, a lot of people just need, ideas. They need something to memory jogger to get those ideas flowing. And so they just like, oh, wow. You mean someone made money doing that?
Yeah.
You know,
well, I mean,
a speaker friend of mine did a hobby of bees for a long time before he turned it into $20,000-$30,000 a year with his kids.
Yeah.
You know, so they just don't think and another speaker buddy of mine, he's a positivity psychologist.
Okay.
And he says, my job is to tell people stuff that they already know. I just have to point out the obvious for them.
There you go.
I'm not a psychologist. But I think I do the same thing. I just point out I'm not trying to steer you in any direction. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to steer you into my network marketing company. I'm not trying to steer you into something I'm promoting.
Yeah.
All I'm trying to do is take your life experiences and have you capitalize on the things that you already know and do.
Sure.
Because if you have a job and your time's limited, isn't it better to make money on stuff that you're already doing?
Yeah. And most likely you have a job that you don't really enjoy. Why not go make money doing something that you really truly love and enjoy on top of that? You know, and I think that's the biggest thing for me. It was always looking at, okay, you know, initially when I first kind of launched out and I was like, okay, I need to make some money. I was looking at, okay, where could I make money and not what is it that I really, truly love? And, you know, I got to a point where I was just absolutely burnt out from making money and really not feeling fulfilled. I mean, the difference for me was when I sold my business, then that gave me the capital to be able to then start to look at, well, what is it that I truly love doing? And, you know, I've been on this mission since to find things that like, okay, how can I make money doing it? But it's got to be something that I truly love and enjoy before I'm even going to get involved in it, you know? And it sounds like you've done a lot of that throughout your life.
Yeah. And you told me, we talked a second about the Henry David Thoreau quote that I have on my LinkedIn profile. Because of what I've always done, I found that quote hard to believe. Mm-hmm. Because I've always enjoyed what I'm doing. Like, how can people be living lives of quiet desperation? Mm-hmm. What's that all about? I was shocked to find out how true that is. I mean, even now, after years of doing this, it's still hard for me to think that really people are still living that way. Why?
Well, the thing I love about that quote is that's the quote that everybody reads, but they don't read the second part of it. And I think it's probably the most true portion of it. What is seen as reservation or what is seen as reservation is actually confirmed desperation.
Yeah.
So I'm giving, yeah. What is seen as I'm just giving up is just, you're just desperate. You're trying to find that thing and you're just not going
money.
After it.
You got to have money.
Yep. And well, and I think what he was saying is you've got to take action. You've got to be desperate enough to take action and do it. I mean, this is a guy who just decided one day to chuck it all and go live in a cabin in the middle of, in the middle of the woods, which I think is kind of funny because if you've ever been to Walden Pond, it was like 2 miles from his house, his parents' home where he lived. So it's like, okay, if it ever got really bad, it's really only a 2 mile walk. But I mean, I get where he was going and the fact that he wanted to kind of chuck it all and really focus on life and living life the way it was. But I think that's for everybody. I mean, it's a telling thing for everybody to say, you just have to be desperate enough to say, okay, I'm sick of what it is and I'm going to make a change, Well, and until you do that, you're not going to change.
And how many people do you know that really got their back pushed against the wall before they had really, really great success?
Sure. Yep.
Yeah. And if you want to go back to my beginning, my back was kind of against the wall because my dream got blown up.
Yeah. Well, and you would put yourself into a situation where it's like, okay, I went and studied something that I really didn't give a crap about. You didn't want to be an accountant. You wanted to be an accountant to become an FBI.
I wasn't good at it either. I pay someone a lot of money to do my taxes.
But I mean, that's a perfect example. It's like, okay, you didn't really have anything. I mean, you could have gone and been an accountant or a bookkeeper or something like that, but you just decided, you know what, I'm going to try something different. And
to be honest, I did apply to a couple of jobs where I got interviews where I thought I had the job, but it didn't happen. God was watching out for me, was watching over me and said, no, this isn't what you want to do. and I just, it's just one of those things where,
you want to live a life of quiet desperation, become an accountant. All right. Well, Bart, let's transition here to the fast five questions. Before that, is there anything new in your world that you want to share with the audience?
So we talked about a memory jogger.
Yeah.
And I think I sent over this to you. I have a I put it together. It's 25 successful side hustle ideas for 2025.
Nice.
It's free to your listeners.
Perfect.
Just go to offer1.bartmerrill.com/25for25. And I'm sure you'll put that in the notes.
Yes.
I do events on Facebook. I just started the Side Hustle Samurai YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. And so it's Bart Merrill, the Side Hustle Samurai. That's places that you can connect and I can help and do. I mean, I'm an open book.
That's awesome.
I don't hide anything. I just tell you how here's it is. What it is.
I mean, I like that you don't have an agenda about, here's this one great offer. Or if you just join me in my, pyramid scheme, I can get you involved. It's all right, let's just figure out what works for you. And you may, with the knowledge of it, you may actually come up with something that none of us has ever thought about.
That's what that 25 for 25 does. It just tells you things that are out there and you're like, really? People are making money at that? Well, maybe I could do this. It just, it's not necessarily for you to, your life experiences are going to be different than the people that probably use that list.
Yep.
But it's going to get you thinking about things you might have never thought about.
That's awesome. Okay, well, let's transition to the fast five questions. So first question, you wake up in the morning, business is gone. You have $500 in your pocket, a laptop computer, a place to live, food and drink. What do you do first?
What do I do first? So when you told me about that question, my first thought was, I wouldn't be in that position because I have multiple streams of
income.
I wouldn't
have put myself in that position, but we just did it to you.
And I would open my mind to the opportunities that are all around me. Mm-hmm. So even in death, my dad taught me a great lesson.
Yep.
You've heard the story of Acres of Diamonds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where Ali Afed sells his farm and the person he sold it to found diamonds in his backyard. Mm-hmm. We have a similar story. Instead of Acres of Diamonds, it's called, you can imagine, Acres of Pig Poop. So at any one time on our farm, we had about 19,000 pigs. Yep. There were more pigs than people in my town because of us.
Well, you come from South New Mexico. There's like 15 people in the entire area. So yeah.
So like I said, Dad wasn't just a pig farmer. He had multiple things that he was doing. When he got to his mid-60s, he decided it was time to shut down the pig operation and go in search of his next big Acres of Diamonds.
Okay.
He died at age 81.
Okay.
Never found that next big thing. About 2.5 years after his passing, we sold the pig farm for $235,000.
Okay.
It was a fair price for the property at the time. Mm-hmm. The new owner of the farm, about 6 months later, was leveling the man-made ponds that we would put the settling ponds. We had three of them. We called them the lagoons.
Yeah.
And they had been dry on top for years, and they were leveling them down to plant almond trees, I think, is what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And the big grader was going across one of those ponds and broke through the crust and sunk up to its belly in this black muck.
Ugh.
They called in experts to analyze the stuff, and right there on the spot, they offered the new owners of our farm $2,000 a ton for the stuff. The farm that we sold for $235,000 is now worth over $1 million.
Wow.
So what about your listeners? Where are they?
Where are your acres of pig manure?
are they overlooking their Acres of Diamonds?
Yeah.
Like Ali Hafed and my dad.
Yep.
I mean, it could be right in your own backyard, right there within your grass, right there under your nose. And like you said, it could even look like a pile of pig poop.
Yep.
And so speaking my dad taught me to be aware.
Of your nose. Yeah.
So what that means is dad taught me to be aware. So I would be aware of the opportunities that are around me.
Yep.
And what can I do for $500?
Yeah.
And that would, and then I would take myself through that process that I showed you. What do you like to do? What do you need to do? What are you already doing?
Yep.
What do you want to do? You know, in my case, I speak fluent Japanese or fairly fluent, and I have a wife who is fluent in Japanese. Yep.
Who could get you up? We could start up an English.
Yeah. We could start up a Japanese conversation class just like that if we wanted to.
Yeah.
And make money. And so, I mean, just be aware of the opportunities that are right there.
Well, but I mean,
you can start now.
I mean, in your case, so you not only speak the language, but you also understand. And I mean, there's apps that can do all that, but you understand the culture of Japan. You could train Japanese. You could train businessmen who have to go over to Japan, or business people who go over to Japan, in the cultural aspects of that much more than just teaching them language at that point.
Yeah. It's just a matter of being aware of the opportunities. I would take myself down that process that I talked about and find the top five.
Yep.
And I would start, okay, which one do I want to try first? Mm-hmm. Which one's going to get me there the quickest?
Yep.
Like I said, I could be wrong because I was about the weight loss. And then the Japan thing, I thought, okay, I'm going to do this. It's never going to happen.
You weren't wrong about the weight loss. You were just really early about the weight loss.
Well, I was wrong about the timing.
Yep.
Whereas Japan, I thought it would take me a lot longer. And within 3 months, I was in Japan.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so
and so
there's your answer there. I hope that helped.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. What's the biggest business mistake you've ever made?
So when I first took the bungee tower to Japan, this is 1994.
Okay.
I got there and there are these big nets huge nets. I'm like, what's that? It was a driving range, like Top Golf.
Yep.
Before Top Golf was even thought about. Mm-hmm. And you go in there, and it was amazing. The ball would come up out of the ground automatically on the tee. On the tee, you could adjust the height of a tee. You didn't have to bend over at all. And you weren't paying for time. You were paying for swings, for hits.
Okay.
And so if you don't have to bend over,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you are, and you buy this little card with like 100 hits or 200 or 500 or 1,000.
Nice.
And you put it in this little machine and you go, bam, 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 bam. And all of a sudden you're out of balls and you're like, what? That was $100.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I got to go buy some more.
Yep.
It was the biggest cash machine that, I mean, and it was just so cool how the machine was. I mean, it was amazing. And so I met with some people over there. I'm just a 24-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And I met with some people over there and I'm like, okay, what is it going to take to get this, something like this in America? And there were just too many zeros for that young kid.
Mm-hmm.
Too many zeros. But what if I had done it?
Mm-hmm.
What if I had taken the action?
Yep.
How much different would my life be?
Sure.
Now, I'm not saying I don't like my life.
No.
Because I do. I like my life. I do what I want mm-hmm. most of the time. I mean, there's things I have to do. Don't get me wrong. I had to come and be on your podcast, but I love it. Mm-hmm. You can see that I love talking about this stuff.
Yep.
But how different would it be? And it maybe have been different in another way, in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people, oh, I wish I was Jeff Bezos. I wish I was Elon Musk. Do you?
Yeah.
Do you know what they went through to get there? Do you know what they do every day? How busy do you really want to be?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, do you want that life? Are you prepared for that life?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so do I really want what I missed? I don't know, but I just, yeah. I look back
but
on that.
It's that one thing like, where you're like, it could have happened. And it's a really different approach from what Topgolf uses. So that, I think it is. Because you feed them a few drinks, and then they just keep getting up there and swinging, and that they're going to walk out of there $300 in the hole.
So, I mean, it's a cash machine, and I'm just like, dang. Top Golf would have never came here if I started that probably. Yeah. It was called F1.
Yeah.
It was F1 Ranges, and man, I haven't been to Japan in a few years, and I wonder what they're like now. If they're, are they different, or are they the same? I haven't gone in a long time.
I'm sure they're probably a little bit more high-tech knowing the Japanese. So,
yeah.
What's a book that you'd recommend for our audience?
Well, now, come on.
Okay.
My selfless pitch is monetize your mindset. Selfless
pitch in there. We will put that in the show notes.
But with what I do, I have to use social media a lot.
Yeah.
And so I really resonate with a lot of Gary Vee's books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got them all.
Yep.
I've got all of them. And I mean, I'm just in the middle. I'm almost done with his latest one, the day trading one.
Yep.
But his first two were great as well about the thank you economy and just being different. And then the jab, 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 right hook. And he talked about how he wanted to name it jab, 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 right hook, but his publisher wouldn't do it.
Yep.
And so anything by Gary Vee has really inspired me. I like his philosophy.
Well, his
I fall very short.
Oh yeah. Well,
I fall short of what he does, but for some reason, my camera crew.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have
my camera crew doesn't show up to follow me around. I don't know why.
Yeah. And
they're supposed to, be right here filming me now, but they're not.
Yeah. And a full editing crew to break that up into bits and pieces and put it all over social media. Yeah. That's the challenge with Gary's approach to some of the stuff. But I think even if you do it half-assed, you still are going to be better. And, you know, I would say it's his consistency more than just the volume of things.
He's correct.
Consistently yes, out absolutely. There every day.
And in today's world with lack of consistency, you know, that used to be the extra mile.
Yep.
You could probably go the extra quarter mile and be way better off than most.
Absolutely. What's a tool that you use in your business every day that you might recommend?
So one of my mentors just introduced me to high level. Oh, go high level.
God.
For my back end stuff.
The greatest. I don't know. I had not heard of it until maybe 3 or 4 months ago. I had a guest on that talked about high level. And I it was like one of those things. Okay, you just put it in the back of your mind. And I just happened to go on to there for something, or I was searching and that popped up. And I'm like, holy crap. I can run my whole, all of my businesses from that one platform.
It's amazing. Yeah. And so that's, and I'm still, I mean, I've found out about it when in like last year, it was probably in October of 2024.
Okay.
Is when I went to an event and signed up with this mentor, and I get high level in the program that they do.
Nice.
And I still have so much that I lack.
Well,
of course the mentor that does it, watching him, and I'm just like, wait.
Yeah.
He does it so fast. It just makes me sick.
But I will say if you have a modicum of technical skill, just a tiny little bit, you can do amazing things with it. And I think the structure of what they're doing with it, especially with virtual assistant, you know, AI virtual assistants and everything else. I know it's going to take me almost a year to migrate everything that I have over onto that system. But by the time I end up with everything migrated over, I'll be spending less than $100 for all my tech stack per month. Yeah. And then it's scalable up from there with how much you use it and things like that. But.
And one of the things that is hard for me that I will warn people about, I shouldn't say warn them, but you got to think through the customer process of where you want to send them.
Yep.
But just watching my mentor do it, it's just like, bam, bam, bam. Mm-hmm. Okay. This one here, this here. Okay. If this happens, this here. And I'm just like, wow, how did you think all that? But he's been doing it for so long. He knows it.
Yeah. That's awesome. You
know, he teaches it.
Yeah. That's so awesome.
That's absolutely. My new thing.
My new toy too. So I'm just absolutely loving it. Last question for you. What is your definition of freedom?
Being able to do what you want to do when you want to do it. Mm-hmm. So my other mentor who I'm learning how to trade the gold dollar from, he makes an outrageous, another mentor that makes me sick because of how much money he can make in a day with only a couple hours a day. But he, once again, another genius level guy, he calls it, he lives life on his own terms. Mm-hmm. And so being able to live life on your own terms, not have a place to go, do what you want when you want to do it. And just if it's to go travel, you can go travel. If it's to stay home and just enjoy life.
Yep.
You can do it. You don't have to be somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so just, you know, in my mentor's words, live life on your own terms. Mm-hmm. In my words is just, to do what I want to do when I want to do it.
Love it. Well, Bart, let's, you know, if somebody is interested in connecting with you, finding out a little bit more, where's the best place to go?
Interact with me on Facebook.
Okay.
Just Bart Merrill. I think you probably have the link to that already.
Yep.
And then my new YouTube channel, which you don't have the link to, is just Bart Merrill, the Side Hustle Samurai.
Nice. Well, we'll make sure we connect all of that into our show notes page. So, Bart, thank you for being on the show. You are an absolute pleasure to talk to, and I just love it. Folks, he's the real deal. I mean, this is, if you want to figure out how to get out of what you're doing, find your freedom day, you need to follow his book. You need to listen to what he does, talk about it, go to his YouTube channel, whatever it is, so that you learn more about how to do this in your own life. So thanks a lot, and we'll see you guys back here the very next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Freedom Nation podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and all the major channels. Wherever you're listening, please subscribe to the channel and leave a rating and review. If you have friends and family that could benefit from their own Freedom Day, please share with them. Finally, join Freedom Nation by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.